Well, this is the main dockyard wall. You can still see a small part of it surviving here, and the gateway, a rather handsome gateway, leading into Woolwich Dockyard, and the little guardhouse on the right inside. And then a rather handsome 18th century building over there is the former home of the Admiral Superintendent of the dockyard here. Apart from those major features, you'd be hard-pressed, I think, to realise when you walk through this area. It was a thriving yard with hundreds of skilled craftsmen at work here, building ships of the line and smaller vessels for the Navy. And it's here that the story of HMS Beagle really begins. I'm Robert Prescott, and I've worked at the University of St Andrews for a number of years in the fields of maritime history and archaeology. I was born in the Medway towns, and the sea was always there, and I remember my early memories are of sailing barges, sailing on the River Medway, and I was a small three-year-old child at that stage, looking up at these enormous vessels sailing past on the shore, and I think I picked up at that very early age the notion that there was something rather special about ships and the sea, and it's been with me ever since. The sounds around us now are really the sounds of a modern city, but 190 years ago, when the Beagle was built on this site, although those noises wouldn't have been around, it would have still been a really very active and a very noisy and busy scene. You can imagine the vessel under construction here. She's 90 feet long on the weather deck. There would have been a squad of shipwrights dubbing away with their adzes, and the hammering of mauls as the planks were spiked up, and the sound of the caulking mallets, a very special ring which they have. It would have been a really industrious and busy sight. Many, many crafts involved in the production of a single warship at that time, even one as small as a 10-gun brig such as the Beagle. My interest in the Beagle is really a dual interest. I trained as a biologist, and of course, as a biologist, I'm very familiar with the story of Darwin's voyage on the Beagle, which had such a great influence on his subsequent biological work and the development of his theory of evolution. So the notion that there was a very interesting kind of ship, which had also this very interesting historical connection with one of the major scientific developments in recent history, it was just too good to be true, really. I wanted to find out more about this ship. And there is this intriguing issue of what happened to her at the end of her life, a ship that has played such an important role in the history of science and had such a curious, anonymous ending.
I just started reading about the Beagle in connection with Darwin and thought, well, I'll just go down to the National Maritime Museum. It would be fun to look at their Beagle stuff. And so I wrote to them, and they wrote back and said, well, there is nothing. And that was sort of a challenge.
Like me, Professor Keith Thompson has long been fascinated by the story of the Beagle, and when he was writing his definitive biography of the ship, he tried to track down her original construction plans in Admiralty drafts.
I said, look, you must have something. You must have the plans. You've got this vast collection of ship's drafts. And eventually, what happened was the Beagle really was not a very significant ship in naval terms, a modified 10-gun brig, and no one had gone to the trouble of drawing up individual plans for any of the 103 10-gun brigs that were ever put on the drawing board. And there was a master plan for a whole number of the 10-gun brigs under the name of HMS Cadmus. And it was a marvellous moment to be there, rummaging through and looking through the plans for Cadmus. And here was this one with all these coloured lines drawn on it. And they were coded very carefully. This one for the Alacrity, this one for the Ariel, and this one for the Beagle.
In 1825, after several years of being laid up in reserve, in ordinary, as we say, HMS Beagle finally received her first serious commission. She was sent by the Hydrographic Office to South America as part of a small squadron of ships under the overall command of Captain Philip Parker King, whose task was to chart the difficult waters and hostile coasts around Tierra del Fuego and Cape Horn. For the ship's officers and crew, it must have been a bit like a journey to the moon. They were far from any kind of assistance, away from any kind of dockyard help, and dependent entirely on their own resources.
I think what we have to remember about the southern tip of South America is one of the most inhospitable places in the world.
Gordon Chancellor is an archivist and Beagle historian.
If you're spending years down there, going around Cape Horn as a fairly sort of routine part of your task, you could be beating to windward for weeks and not getting anywhere. You could be sailing, trying to make a few miles of progress against the gales and the storms. So absolutely appalling part of the world from the point of view of the weather.
They were badly provisioned. Almost all the crew had scurvy. The weather was really impossible. Philip Parker King, who had commanded the voyage, had decided that they would go down to South America to get the bad weather over with as quickly as possible, which of course was madness.
And we have to remember that this is a vast country. You know, we're talking about thousands of miles of coast to be surveyed, which have never been looked at in any great detail. It was a huge job for the captain, had a massive responsibility.
And ultimately, the Beagle's first commander, Pringle Stokes, found the burden overwhelming.
So he was trying to drive westward through the Straits of Magellan in the worst possible weather, a time of year, and apparently in very, very bad weather, with a crew that was relatively unskilled, apparently. And they were all sick with scurvy, so they were weak and feeble. It simply was too much for him. He went into a complete breakdown and turned around, went back as soon as he could, and when they were in relatively in safety, he shot himself.
The death of Pringle Stokes was perhaps the lowest point in HMS Beagle's long and illustrious career. A career which eventually involved three major voyages, each lasting several years, two circumnavigations of the globe, and most famously her role in the story of Charles Darwin and his theory of evolution. And it's because of the Beagle's extraordinary achievements that I'm so fascinated by what happened to her in her later years. What we do know is that in October 1843, when she returned to Britain after her third great voyage, she was paid off here at Woolwich Dockyard, exactly where she'd begun her life 25 years earlier. And she embarked then on a very different career for the second half of her working life. The Navy List, for example, this 1863 extract from the Navy List here, lists all the Coast Guard watch vessels by name, and under Beagle, Brig, it shows watch vessel, Southend. But if we go to the Admiralty Progress book, it is much more specific than the Navy List, and it shows here that the Beagle was docked in June 1845 and her bottom was coppered, and she then sailed in July 1845, and the annotation reads, Coast Guard at Pagelsham. So we know that she was assigned to the Southend district at the Pagelsham station. Now, if we just look at this chart here, this is a new survey of the rivers in Essex carried out by the Hydrographic Office using a little steam-powered survey vessel in 1847, 2 years after the progress books tell us that the Beagle was assigned to Pagelsham. And if you look here in the River Roach, there in the middle of the river, right in the fairway, is a little ship mark, and alongside it the inscription, Coast Guard Vessel. So that must be the Beagle. I mean, this is the only watch vessel that's ever been assigned to Pagelsham in the Southend district. And there she is, right in the middle of the river. I like to imagine the Beagle during those later years just sitting quietly in the River Roach as an old lady reflecting on her glory days. By then she would have been tired, battered and faded, her timbers beginning to rot, but within those timbers were the memories of what she'd achieved, the extraordinary places she'd been, the storms she'd weathered and the men she'd carried. So this is Darwin writing home to his sister Caroline in March 1833, and he gives this account of a rather grim passage around the corner. He said, "We doubled Cape Horn on a beautiful afternoon. It was, however, the last we were doomed to have
for some time. After trying to make head against the westerly gales, we put into a cove near the Cape. Here we experienced some tremendous weather. The gusts of wind fairly tear up the water and carry clouds of spray. We again put to sea, with no better success. Gales succeed gales with such short intervals that a ship can do nothing."
This shows, I think it's 1:30 in the afternoon on the 13th of January 1833, painting by John Chancellor, showing the Beagle. I think Fitzroy's expression now, little vessel was sorely tried. And can you see the starboard quarter here is one of the whale boats, 28-foot whale boats, that had to be hacked away because she was, you know, the ship might have been pulled down by the weight of water in the whale boat.
At breakfast, I was remarking that a gale of wind was nothing so very bad in a good sea boat. The captain told me to wait till we shipped to sea. It was prophetic, for at noon we shipped a great one, and it is a sight for a landsman to remember. One of our boats was knocked to pieces and was immediately cut away. The water being deep on the deck, it did me an infinity of harm, as it wetted a great deal of paper and dried plans. I suffered also much from seasickness.
You can see on the deck, because the Beagle's turned, she's almost tipped right over here, she's almost capsized at that point. It gives you some idea of the sheer terror of that situation. It's a very critical moment, isn't it?
It is, and you'll see that she's got most of her top hamper down on deck. The yards have all been brought down to reduce the windage, and even so, she's in danger of having a complete knockdown there, isn't she, really?
Yeah. She was very, very nearly went to the bottom then, and that would have been the end of the Beagle voyage, a premature end, but... Mm-hmm. You know, some charts and some of Darwin's specimens had already gone home, but we'd have lost some very important findings if that
some very important people.
The next wave had come along.